Hello, everyone, and welcome to Open Observability Talks. I'm Dotan Horvitz, and here at Open Observability Talks, we talk about anything DevOps, observability, and open source. So may the open source be with you. And I'm glad to say we've just concluded the third season of the show, the third year going. That's an amazing achievement, and I want to thank you all for the feedback, for the support, for following. I actually wrote a summary post for the year, so I'll post it also here for the members. You can check it out here, and obviously for the listeners, that's on the live stream, and for the listeners on the podcast, I'll also post it on the show notes. And we've done so much in this last year. I'm amazed to see we touched much broader than just operational observability. We touched FinOps, we touched platform engineering. We touched so many end user like Meta and others, and also the projects, obviously, OpenTelemetry and Prometheus and so on. So that was an exciting year. And now I'd like to also thank our sponsors, Logs.io, the cloud-native observability platform. Logs.io takes the best of breed open source projects such as Prometheus, OpenSearch, Jaeger, and OpenTelemetry, and offers them as a unified observability platform built for scale. For those joining the live stream on YouTube or Twitch, feel free to share questions and comments on the live chat. We'd be happy to take some of these questions and comments into the live discussion. And with that, let's move on to today's episode. Today, I'm hosting Vijay Samuel, who is the observability architect at eBay. I heard Vijay at KubeCon, at SREcon, and I was impressed by the sheer scale of eBay's operation and the way they handle it, as well as their use of open source. And we'll talk about all of that today on the show. And another fascinating topic I got to discuss with Vijay and his partner is a new proposal for a query language standard for observability, which eBay spearheads together with Netflix under the auspices of the CNCF's TAG Observability, the Technical Advisory Group for Observability, which just a week or two ago kickstarted as a new working group. So really great news, hot off the press. And with that, I'd like to invite Vijay to join me on the show. Hey, Vijay, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Where are you joining us from?
I'm in eBay's headquarters in San Jose today.
That's amazing. I just realized, I told you that just before the broadcast, that I realized the first time we met in person was last year at KubeCon North America in Detroit with the fellows at the dinner there for TAG Observability, the Technical Advisory Group. That's like a closure now that you're part of the TAG Observability with the new initiative with the query language standardization. So that's exciting to get you on the show after that all this journey.
Yeah. Today morning also, I was like trying to figure out like when did we first meet, and then I say Dotun was in the dinner.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I see you're with the Invent Week. That is a T-shirt. That's the prime week of eBay engineering, right?
Yeah, this week at eBay is Invent Week. Like we are given the opportunity for 5 days to come up with innovations that push the boundary for our both our customers and for our platform. There are many cool things that come out of it, and like a fun fact is that the SREcon talk and scale talk that we did about our planet scale Prometheus installation was actually vetted out and proved during one of the past hack weeks or Invent Week. So the timing is good. So given that we're talking about actually Invent Week as well.
Inspired by Google's Monarch research paper, right?
Yeah. So I think when we first built our metric store platform on top of Prometheus, we wanted it to be Kubernetes first, being able to discover shards and do query routing on top of objects that we built on Kube API server. It worked great, but the scale like started to climb pretty high that handling vast amount of cardinality became difficult. And close to Hack Week was when like the Monarch paper actually came about, and me and a few folks in the team were like, wouldn't it be awesome to actually see if we can make it work inside of eBay with anything that's available in open source. Google, being Google and the technology that it has, like there are things that they can just take it for granted, configs being available everywhere at the same time through Spanner and whatnot. But we don't have access to that. So it was a really fulfilling experience to not only successfully prototype it, but actually also have it run in production now. Because we were able to do something similar with the help of open source and things that we came up with ourselves. So that's
amazing.
It's helping the business now in terms of the scale where we are at, and opening new avenues in which we can run observability on top of metrics. So it's been an absolute pleasure to work.
And by the way, I had on this show, one of the episodes was with Ben Siegelman, who's been part of the team at Google who implemented and supported and scaled out Monarch within Google. So it was a fascinating episode. For those who look for this episode, Expensive Observability, that was the name of the episode. And he really shared some very cool insights about the journey that Google took internally to come up with Monarch. And for those who don't know, Monarch is the internal implementation, the internal tooling that Google created for their metrics store and analytics. So a fascinating episode. And in general, what you said about the Hack Week, even last month when I had the episode with Spotify's senior engineering manager about how Backstage went open source, it also started with Hack Week, Spotify Hack Week, where they proved that it's feasible to take the existing project and open source it. And the power of hackathons to their variants is amazing. And it's glad to see that it's live and kicking also in large organizations such as eBay. And you mentioned the scale, and I saw your talk at KubeCon, if I'm not mistaken, probably or maybe another, but I was struck by the scale of your operation. Can you give us some sense of the scale of observability for eBay?
Sure. Yeah. With regards to metrics, at least at any given point in time, we roughly have 2.5 million Prometheus endpoints that are being scraped, which translates to roughly 60 million samples per second that we ingest into the platform, and roughly 2.5 billion active series that we store on the Prometheus head blocks. And these series are pretty much helping us do detection on top of business metrics. If the core indicators are through anomaly detection, we know if they are misbehaving. Then we have health-aware rollouts using KPIs and some anomaly detection models as well to figure out if there is a bad change being rolled out or not, so that we can trigger a quick rollback. And all these basically are just querying, I shouldn't say querying, they're bombarding the system with at least 10,000 queries per second at any given point in time. We also have our SRE partners have also built SLOs on top of the data and burn rate alerts and whatnot that's helping them know how all the APIs are behaving and whatnot. So there are a lot of complex use cases that we have built. We also have a huge logs platform that's there, which pumps in roughly 15 petabytes of logs every day. So it's a pretty massive scale shop that we run. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy working at eBay, because you don't get to play with such scale in a lot of organizations. And the learnings have been pretty good for our team as well, which forces us to push the boundaries. And the Planet Scale Metrics platform is a very good example of that. We are trying our hand with tracing now, trying to deliver instrumentation through our managed frameworks into all applications that power the eBay site, so that we can also have a better time to triage than what we have right now. Still very early, early beta, I should say. But hopefully, we should have like a pretty sizable tracing installation in the coming months or maybe next year.
That sounds fascinating. And, you know, let's talk a bit about this. So I know it's early on, but I think OpenTelemetry is your go-to, right, for tracing? Is that right?
For right, ingesting right, instrument. We use the tracing SDKs. We have applications that instrument primarily with Java and Node.js, and also some applications in Go as well. On every Kubernetes cluster that we run, we have OpenTelemetry Collector running local to the cluster so that applications, knowing a well-known endpoint within the cluster, they can ship their spans. We do enrichment, generate red metrics, and ship it into our backend, for which we use ClickHouse right now. We also have exemplars enabled on all the free instrumentation that we ship through our managed frameworks, so that specifically things like latencies, we have exemplars as well. So what we dub as the three-click RCA, where you start from an alert, you go to a graph, you see an exemplar, you click it, look at the waterfall, and then from there, you have a clickable attribute for the logs. You click there, and then you look at the raw logs. So that is the experience that we are trying to champion, so that like people's time to triage gets cut down. We are working through it because like exemplars are still like very nascent technology right now. Even if you take Prometheus as an example, they only have in-memory exemplars. It doesn't support recording rules, which I have a PR out, and we are working through the reviews and whatnot. At least the feeling that we have internally is that an exemplar-based approach is very powerful. It doesn't require you to store 100% samples and then do tail sampling on top of that and things like that. So there are a lot of benefits which we are trying to explore. Tracing is ever evolving. I try to tell people as well, like it's pretty hard. We have done so many iterations of collector pipelines, one tier, two tier, back to one tier, and then two tier again, like to get things figured out in a cost optimized way, while we provide enough business value for our internal developers to actually use the product. So a lot of learnings.
I see it in many organizations that trying to get to champion distributed tracing within the organization has some resistance, or at least not clear for everyone what's the benefit. And the investment is significant. You need to instrument across the organization to really get the value. You need to have all the parts of the chain instrumented. You can actually see the transaction or the request going flowing through the and what's the ROI? That's always the question that I keep on encountering. And for us, it's we know the value and we know the benefit, but it's a story that we need to sharpen also as a community and also internally when we champion it in the organization.
Right. Yeah. And I think like we have seen success stories where like our SREs have used it to say, hey, this timeout value is probably set too high, and that's what's causing these APIs to take too long. There was an SLO alert, and they were using tracing to triage it. There have been wins, but if we expect every application owner within the company to do manual instrumentation, it's a very hard problem, and I don't think the engineering effort would be return on the investment. So that is where like we have picked an approach where we instrument into the framework that everyone uses. And this framework keeps getting upgraded every month through a mandatory site-wide upgrade. So it's very easy for us to roll out new instrumentation. And we say, like, try not to instrument on your own as well. Because, like, if you have, like, a very big call chain and then you have, like, custom spans on top of it, you are basically being a noisy neighbor for everyone on the chain if they are trying to debug something. Tracing, I cannot stress it enough. Like, it's a very hard problem that is very easy to screw up as well.
And I think it also comes down to taking a platform engineering approach to tracing. Doing it at an organization in your scale and leaving it to independent teams to instrument each one with its own approach, each one with its own, semantic conventions to the extra payload that is not standardized is a problem. Because if you want to get, especially with tracing that needs the consistency across the trace and needs the context to be consistent, I think having a platform or a framework that instruments it uniformly as a cross-cutting concern across the organization, I think that's a great way to go in large organizations, and also to reduce the noise and effort for the individual teams, because they're definitely not keen to do the instrumentation themselves. So I'm sure that they're not complaining about that. I wanted to talk about you mentioned several open sources. You mentioned ClickHouse, and you mentioned OpenTelemetry, and you mentioned others and Prometheus. And that's a key thing that I see and not taken for granted for an organization such as yourselves to use open source extensively. And I think you're like power users back in the day, even with Elastic Beats, right? For collecting logs and metrics, FileBeat, MetricBeat. I think you're probably still one of the biggest, most prominent contributors to the Beats open source projects, right?
So after OpenTelemetry came about, we started mindfully pivoting into OpenTelemetry because it's more or less the standard. Some of the features that we wanted were readily available on OpenTelemetry as well, like specifically for metrics. A good example would be that stale markers. The Prometheus Scrape Manager is being used inside of the OpenTelemetry collector, and it emits stale markers correctly. And that was a problem that we had with MetricBeat. And if you were to implement stale markers on top of it, it would double the memory cost because you need to store the previous sample and then do a stale marker on top of that. And it would be something that the community needs to accept as well. So there were like many reasons for us. And tracing, we started off with OpenTelemetry as well, which would mean that we'd be half on one side and half on the other side. So like given that tracing was there, we mindfully moved metrics, and we'll eventually move logs into OpenTelemetry as well, given that more or less it's the standard that everyone will have to align. So that being said, yes, at one point we were one of the biggest installations of Beats that exists. And now I'm hoping that we are one of the bigger installations of OpenTelemetry collectors that exist in the wild. The migration was definitely challenging because like ensuring feature parity when you move from one project to another, especially if you have like millions of endpoints being scraped, we did run into a lot of challenges. But like as a good citizen of open source, we did the right thing in trying to patch them on open source rather than try to fork. So at least we had functional parity for us to be able to safely move into OpenTelemetry, and we would try to do the same for logs as well.
So MetricBeat to OTel, and now FileBeat essentially to OTel. That's the migration path.
Yeah. OTel collector. But in the long run, if you have read some of the design documents on OpenTelemetry, they dub the log file tailing approach as the legacy approach of collecting. In the future, similar to how we rolled out the gRPC exporter based tracing implementation, I'd like to see if we can do the same thing for logs as well. That way, it's gRPC, it's one path that we use for everything and one standard. Developers don't have to learn different things to do logs, metrics, traces, and maybe even profiles once it is available on OpenTelemetry.
So let's talk about this very basic thing before we even go down to the technicalities. Why in an organization and a vendor such as a company such as yourselves, why go the open source path in the first place? Why not go with a vendor that will offer you maybe even all these types of functionality and telemetry types and whatnot as part of one enterprise closed source solution?
The first reason is the community, obviously. There are a plethora of people coming from different kinds of organizations who are looking at different problems and then they are trying to solve it in the open. It provides us an opportunity to be a good citizen and then contribute. New features, like a good example on OpenTelemetry would be that it did not have support for exemplar scraping on the Prometheus receiver. And one of my teammates, Aishwarya, she went and contributed that. And now like everyone can use it. And another reason that's there is cost of scale. Like it would definitely cost us a lot of money to get a vendor on board and then be able to ingest 2.5 billion time series into the platform. So I think we run at a scale where it's hard for us to build everything ourselves. But at the same time, it's not easy for us to go and buy something and expect it to break even in terms of cost. So the happy middle path is to be a good citizen on the open source communities, show what problems that we see at scale, which a lot of these project contributors would probably not see, and also contribute to make it better. We did it for Beats. We did a lot of bug fixes, scale optimizations, and also features. Like if you have seen hints-based auto-discover, to use annotations on your pod spec to tail log files or scrape endpoints and whatnot. That is something we basically worked with them and then got it to a point where it is a proper feature for Beats to consume. And it is one of the more feature-rich annotation-based Kubernetes discovery mechanisms that are out there. So when we work together, better things can come out. And when I wrote the first feature internally, it was nothing compared to what we came up with when we worked with the community. It was a far better product. So I think that is one of the big power enablers in open source, where we always think that we have the best implementation, but like when you work with other people who potentially are smarter than you, you come up with more graceful implementations that can help a lot more people.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you talked about your major contributions to established open source, such as Elastic Beats back in the day, that there was it was an Apache 2 ecosystem, and OpenTelemetry now, and so on. And there are also your own projects that you built from scratch that you're maybe considering open source. Do you want to say a word about that?
Yeah, so like we are passively exploring what it would mean to or is it, if people would be interested in consuming something like our metric store platform, or not consuming, contributing is the right word to use. So if anyone thinks that what we have built is cool and it would be nice if it's out in the open for people to come in and contribute and at the same time add value to their organization from an observability perspective, please do reach out to us. And to go back to the backstage example, like this year, at least in Invent, we are actually looking at, okay, can our stuff be deployed in Google Cloud or any public cloud provider? Because like if we decide to open source, one of the things that needs to work is it needs to properly work on other cloud providers, because we run our own cloud internally. So happy to hear feedback and interest. If anyone has interest, please post in the comments or reach out to me on social media, and then let's have the conversation.
Yeah, so that's you heard it here first, and on Open Observability Talks, folks, there's very exciting and very impressive implementation of metric store and analytics backend at scale that we'll hear a bit more. But if you are interested, let's encourage eBay to contribute that to the open source and show your enthusiasm in taking part in contributing and getting involved in this project. Maybe that will help move the needle and get it to be done. So Vijay, we'll mention also the how to contact Vijay at the end of the episode, and you'll have that also on the show notes for the on the podcast. But definitely Great call out, and thanks for sharing it with us. And I'm sure our audience are the perfect audience for this. So you came to the right place. And let's talk about the details, that impressive talk that I heard about scaling Prometheus and the planet scale observability. Then take us through this this process that you took with making it scale in this in these sizes.
So the one of the problems that we faced initially when we did the first pass of our metric store implementation was that we had the concept of clusters. A cluster can have X number of shards, which means that you can take a time series, you can hash mod it, figure out which shard it needs to land on. So instead of having like a behemoth one terabyte memory worth of single Prometheus, you could essentially say that I have like 20 shards of size 50 gigabytes per shard and whatnot. So we went through that exercise, and then we figured out that, okay, it's probably good to have a shard that accommodates maybe 20 million active time series on the head block. 20 million is an arbitrary number that I'm throwing. So what if a use case comes in that has, say, 600 million or 800 million in cardinality? We have certain use cases that that are at, I think, 300 million per internal tenant. We like to call them namespaces. So what happens then? Prometheus will absorb all of it without any problems. It will store it in the head block. The more memory you give it, it's fine. But the real problem comes in when you're trying to query it out, and you're trying to make me good meaning out of it in terms of either anomaly detection or whatnot. And that's where like the problem came in. It's like there are more demanding use cases which have higher cardinality that we cannot really support. And one way in which you could potentially solve this is to layer things in a different way, in which you say, okay, I have three regions. I'll store data per region, local to the region itself. And then I have like a root querier, which can just say that, okay, this is the query that you're looking for, or the series that you're looking for. It's there in region one, region two, but not there in region three. So I should skip all the shards in region three and then just query where the data is alone available. So that is the path that at least Monarch prescribed in the white paper. And they do it using what is called a field hint index. So every label, the metric name, you either generate n-grams or you you generate a fingerprint out of it, and then you store the fingerprint. And then when the query comes, you basically find out where those fingerprints are and route the query only there. So then you can have, say, C-advisor metrics that are local to the cluster that sits only within the cluster that it's actually there. And then you can roll up stuff and then store it at the region. So you don't have the raw cardinality, but you have the rolled up cardinality in a different layer that's higher. And then you have a root that basically is able to fan out queries. So you can give different retention to the raw data, different retention to the rolled up data and whatnot. And this basically provides you a mechanism in which like you can theoretically scale infinitely. And that is where basically... we felt is the right way to go, and the field index approach that Monarch prescribes is pretty powerful, because like every open source implementation that that you look at today, they basically scatter together into all the shards that are there. It's really not necessary. It's wasteful. It's slow, from a technology perspective, like moving from the old model into the new model has been pretty powerful for us. And one of the other problems that we had was that how would you do routing? So we have a very reserved label, like a tenant ID. We call it namespace. Every series that comes in, we look at the namespace. We look at, okay, there is a routing table where this namespace goes into this cluster. Which means that when you query as well, you need that routing key to say that, okay, this namespace sits on this cluster. I fan out into all shards in that cluster. This becomes problematic from a native Prometheus experience, because you can no longer do series API. You no longer can do labels API, because for all of them, you need to provide a namespace, and semantically, it doesn't work. And if you are using Grafana, then you basically cannot use autocomplete. A lot of problems existed. So the pivot would be, again, to go the field hint index approach. Have a arbitrary query that is there, which doesn't even have the tenant ID. It will exactly tell you where to look for the data, and then you basically look. So we became more Prometheus compatible by pivoting into that approach as well. So like a lot of positives were there, not only from a scale perspective, but from a usability perspective as well, which basically became Planet Scale that is today for us.
Very nice. We have also a question here from the audience. The question is, with that excess of amount of data, what is your methodology and policy for retention?
So, like I mentioned, we have the concept of tenant-based clustering. So right now, what we do is like we have like a default cluster that's there where pretty much everyone goes in. That gets like a standard retention, maybe a year. For use cases that have higher cardinality, we typically try to tenant them on different clusters. And given that a cluster is its own physically separated entity, we can provide different retention for that. Some might have 1 month, some might have 6 months. That's basically the kind of policies that we apply today.
Very interesting. And when you look at the sharding replication aspects, there is some sort of a trade-off, right? You need to compromise in order to have such a share nothing replication. There is a compromise to be made, right, in this scale?
Right.
Or did you encounter this?
Right. Yeah. So for replication, we don't do any consensus-based replication, because like that adds some amount of complexity associated to it. So the way that we replicate is that you have your ingest APIs, which support Prometheus remote write. They see the data, they look up the routing table to figure out how many replicas are there for the given cluster. So if it's two replicas or three replicas or whatever, we find each of those shards to write into, and then we parallelly write. The number of writes that basically stick, they are what they stick. That is what it is. Usually all three writes happen without any issues. But when we query out, we can always do like streaming merge dedupe, and then make sure that we have a consistent view when you try to query.
What did you think, by the way, of solutions such as Cortex that are available in the open source and under the CNCF stack for these sorts of scaled out Prometheus compatible stores?
At least when we were building out the first implementation, Cortex was still actually when we were well into the implementation is when Cortex came out, and it was still not fully production grade yet. And by the time they became more mainstream, we were like well into the journey that it didn't make sense for us to converge back into something like Cortex. Their design choices are interesting. Some of our design choices align pretty closely to them as well, but some places we deviate. For example, like they have the ring, and if one of the shards is down, they keep readjusting the ring. In our case, like we take a more simplistic approach to say that, okay, out of 10 shards, if one shard is down, there are probably still two more replicas that are there. So we really don't care. We don't try to readjust the ring because the cardinality will keep churning within the remainder of the shards. We figured out a mechanism that works for us, which did not require as much complexity as systems like Cortex have, and like it has worked for us, so we are just sticking with it.
That's fair enough. No, because it really some of the things you said resonated with the choices that Cortex made, but as you said, apparently some of the choices aren't, so it's valid enough. So that's your I guess metric solution, that the one that you mentioned as before, that you're considering open sourcing. So folks, again, if you're interested in that, do a follow up with Vijay. It may be a very interesting thing to collaborate on should the eBay decide to go ahead with this open source. Sounds like an exciting contribution. And let's talk about tracing. You mentioned that very briefly before. This is the new kid on the block. So tell us a bit about what you're facing there.
So at least with tracing, sometime last year, we started at a very small pilot level initiative where we got a handful of teams to come together and instrument their workflows to say that, okay, one entire workflow, if we had tracing, how would it look like? Is there business value to it? There was a reasonable amount of interest and success that we had in that we started going full-blown on the platform engineering route, instrumented the frameworks, delivered it through our site-wide upgrade program, and it's available for pretty much all our microservices that run or power the eBay site itself. We took a very conservative approach in the sense that we started with the 0.01% sample rate, so 1 in 10,000 requests get sampled. And at the scale at which a company like eBay runs, it's very easy to get a sample, even if you are doing 1 in 10,000. So we started getting the data in and figuring out how to structure our pipeline. There are God knows how many times we have run into memory limiter dropping spans. And my teammates, Hoffman and Aishwarya, they have been at it to figure out what the right pipeline should look like. And I think we finally have one. So from 0.01, we moved to 0.1, 1%. And now we are getting ready to move into 2% samples. And the idea is that figure out a sample rate that is good enough. 100% sample rate is probably we don't know. My opinion is that no company should need 100% samples. We are mindfully moving up the sampling rate to a point where it's okay, beyond this, we really don't need it. We are actively working with our SRE partners to figure out, okay, do we need any tooling or visualization? Can the data be pulled out and analyzed in such a way that it supplements the analytics that we have on top of our metrics platform, our events platform, and things like that? So it's an ongoing journey for sure. The platform engineering route helps us, like you mentioned, to standardize attributes in a way that everyone gets a consistent experience. We have tried our hand with even device level instrumentation. So there is a project on our eBay open source GitHub repository, which basically allows you to do iOS instrumentation, which is compliant with OpenTelemetry. So we have device level spans also coming in. So it's easy for an SRE to come in and or even a mobile developer to come in and say that, okay, this is my service for the device, and every interaction that actually was instrumented, you should be able to see that along with all the actual service calls that are there. It's a really powerful thing, which we have never had, and OpenTelemetry has capability for browser telemetry as well. Front-end developers struggle to know what is actually happening in the browser.
In the mobile device, in the web application, all the way to the edge, and beyond.
Yeah, so it's the opportunities that tracing and OpenTelemetry in general are bringing is pretty substantial, that we are experimenting and then finding sustainable ways in which we can enhance our observability toolkit. To again improve time to triage, which I think tracing plays a big role. I think we have some knowledge that we probably have that we can share, so looking for more opportunities either in conferences or blog posts that we hopefully will have in some of the learnings that we have had in tracing. It's an interesting and pretty challenging journey that we have been through. I think that's an accurate way to summarize how things have gone with the tracing so far.
That's nice. And in that context, I should also mention that what you did with OTel, with OpenTelemetry Collector, and running that at scale and optimizing, you know, many people ran OTel in production encountered when it comes to certain loads and certain workloads and processes that you can very easily get this process to blow up with memory or whatnot. And I think you've mastered this part very well. Do you want to share a bit about how you your journey with OTel Collector?
Sure. Our journey, while it started with tracing was still pretty much alpha with the early customer based feedback loop that was in. The serious journey was actually with metrics, because like metrics was more of a GA platform. It directly powers time to detect, which means that any hiccup can actually blind us on what is actually happening on the site. So from that perspective, like we had to do a thorough analysis on what we need, what would scale, not scale. LNP numbers came out great when one of our engineers in Shanghai, Peter Deng, like he is one of our go-to for agents. He did a thorough analysis, and from an LNP perspective, it was good. Then he, along with Premendra Singh, he runs agents here in San Jose. They basically worked on closing some of the feature gaps. And one critical feature gap that was there is the ability to do dynamic pipeline reloading. That is a feature that we used to rely heavily on Beats, because whenever a pod comes up, you need to be able to watch the API server saying, okay, this pod has come up. It has a certain set of annotations, which means that this is the port that you need to poll for this certain pod IP. And when it dies, you need to tear the pipeline down. That was a feature that did not exist. So like we came up with a receiver that can do reloads of configuration, so that whenever a new config comes in, it stitches a pipeline and then tears it down. I'm not sure if the community still has that feature. But if it doesn't, then there is a PR that we filed initially that got closed. So if folks have watched my KubeCon talk and they want to consume that feature, it's there. Just pull it and then build your own distribution to have it. But
you have your own distro, just for the audience to understand. So you have a downstream distro of the vanilla that you enhanced with your own receivers and processors and so on, just so you understand.
Right. Yeah, it's a stock OTel along with plugins that we add in and then ship out into our internal clusters. And one of the receivers that we put in is this file reloader receiver, which there is a PR upstream for that. But yeah, yes. Like once that feature was closed, then basically it's going through the motions of thorough testing. So Premendra Singh, he came up with an automation that can basically spin up metric beats, spin up OpenTelemetry collector, scrape the same thing, and then make sure that the labels are the same for both sides. If it's not, then we are basically, when you roll it out, you're going to churn cardinality across the board. So like these are the nuances that are very challenging that we had to go through when we did this. Like there were several rollbacks that we had to do, because like, okay, we found this new bug, let's go fix it upstream. And like we refused to customize the receiver internally. It would have been very easy if we had done that, but then that has like long-term repercussions. So the agent folk, what they did is they added all these things behind feature gates, saying that, okay, this is different from the way that Prometheus actually does it, especially label sanitization. So once those were taken care of, then basically it was like go cluster by cluster, upgrade everything to the point where we run stable OpenTelemetry collector at the scale at which we do right now. And like we also mindfully do like quarterly upgrades to make sure that we are still keeping close to the most recent version. And that's a very interesting part about OpenTelemetry. Like it's so crazy in the amount of commits and contributors that it has. It's you have to be close to the latest release, or like at some point you're gonna fall back far too behind.
Yeah, even quarterly sounds like ages in the pace that OpenTelemetry moves these days. It's like the second most active project on the CNCF after Kubernetes itself. So yeah, I know what you mean. Let's talk. I want to switch over from eBay to the community. And one of the most fascinating discussions that I had at KubeCon Europe just a couple of months ago in Amsterdam was about the observability query language standardization, a standard for querying observability across logs, metrics, traces, and potentially other signals. For me, that was a very exciting thing to see. And that was with Chris. You weren't there, unfortunately. You weren't able to attend in person. But Chris from Netflix, who is your partner in crime, let's put it this way. So he was there, and we had a very, very interesting discussion there and meeting about that. So let's start with the basics. Tell us what's it about and what's the pain? Why do we even need that? And let's take it from there.
Yeah, so the query standardization working group's primary charter is to figure out the landscape of observability, primarily from a query standpoint. So we have an established standard now, which is project/vendor neutral in how we can ingest data. But on the query side, different people at different times have come in to create a language that at certain points we felt made the best sense. But there are too many options right now. Everything has its own strength. Compatibility is a big challenge as well. So the idea is to survey those language creators, to survey end users, to see what are the pain points, what are the things that worked in certain languages that did not, what did not, and things like that, and to come up with a database of all this information, which could potentially be used to come up with a recommendation of sorts to say that, okay, if we were to have something like what SQL is for the database world, this is probably a recommendation that we can make for observability based on what we have heard from customers saying that this is how we use data, and from providers to say that these are the technicalities that we need to make sure that when you actually talk to storage or do anything on behalf of the customer, this makes sense, this is technically infeasible, and things like that. So that is the charter of the working group per se. And why
before going to the how and the challenges and aggregating the knowledge on how to implement, let's take a step back to really understand the pain. And I want to put it in the plain words so that all of our listeners understand. So for example, I'm a DevOps guy, and when I have logs and I have metrics and whatnot, and then when I go to my logs, I query them using, let's say, Lucene query, if I use Elasticsearch or OpenSearch or Solr or whatnot. And then when I want to query the equivalent metrics or vice versa, if I started from the metrics and then to the logs, and the metrics I query if it's Prometheus with PromQL or maybe InfluxQL if I work with the Influx ecosystem and so on. And the jumping between different languages and different DSLs and different semantic ways of expressing things, this is a pain, right? Why did you in eBay even start looking at this pain?
So one of the things that we mindfully decided at some point as we went through the observability journey inside of eBay is that you standardize at the two ends. So on ingest, you have publicly supported open contracts that are there. And on the query side also, you try to do something similar to the point where it's like, if a new piece of storage technology comes in, we should be able to swap the technology without impacting end users. Because for large organizations, migrating from one standard to another is a multi-year journey in itself. So OpenTelemetry has done that for from an ingest perspective. So even within the realm of metrics, while Prometheus is more or less the standard that's there from an open source perspective. There are so many open source clients that people end up getting fascinated about. Like you have the stock Prometheus client that's there, you have Micrometer client that's there. You'd probably have like 10 other clients that people are really happy about. But like if you have like thousands of microservices that are running within your company, like having everyone use their own SDKs is a bit problematic. Like because if you want to deprecate one, it's very hard. So OpenTelemetry has gotten us to that point on the ingest side. And we want to do something similar on the query side. Like regardless of what the underlying storage is, we should have one standard language in which we can interface with the system. And that problem is more pronounced on the query side than on the ingest side, if we are really being frank about it. For metrics, you have PromQL. For logs, you have LogQL or Lucene. And for tracing, you have Jaeger, you have TraceQL. Some have DSL, some have don't. They are just APIs. It's very difficult. And every time you marry yourself into one of the project's public interface, if the project for some reason does not have any more contributors, then basically you're stuck and you have to figure out how to migrate into a different one and migrate all the dashboards that are there as well. At least within eBay, like we have, I was taking stock a couple of days ago, we have more than 8,000 dashboards that are there. Like, and if each one of them are actually using an interface that's defunct now, it becomes a big problem. So that is one of the things, like have a consistent experience between logs, metrics and traces. Like interoperability is still a problem that's 10 steps ahead, but have a consistent language. And the other thing is like every system or a medium to large organization can always have multiple observability providers. It's a very natural thing. Like you might be using a project for its strengths for a portion of your use cases, and you might be using a product for its strengths on a limited scale in some of the use cases. But how do we interoperate across them? If you take metrics, like should the end time be included or excluded? Like one project might decide something and the product might decide something other than that. So we should be able to say that, okay, I want to be able to query from multiple providers and also bring them into a query interface. Like there are so many places where a standardized query language makes a lot of sense, not only from an interoperability perspective, but from a standard for everyone to adopt. So I think like that is a problem that few of us pitched in KubeCon North America during one of the OpenTelemetry discussions. And Alolita and Matt have been pretty gracious in facilitating the conversation to the point where we have a working group. So anyone who finds this as a problem, like I strongly urge you and welcome you to come join the working group so that like we can solve this problem in a meaningful way and take the entire observability community to the next level.
Yeah, and just for the audience who is not familiar with the members that you mentioned, essentially the working group started under TAG Observability, the Technical Advisory Group for Observability of the CNCF. So now it's an independent, its own working group after the TOC approved the charter, and it's fairly new. So I think the first meeting call for the working group was the end of May, right? The 30th or something like that of May. So it's really, really fresh, and everyone can now still join and the impact, it's really in the first stages of this working group.
Right.
And yeah, it's so also you mentioned there's also a Slack channel on the CNCF Slack where you run that. Do you want to say a word about that?
I don't remember the Slack channel name on top of my mind, but we have a Slack channel in CNCF Slack. We can probably put it in the comment section after this. And we meet first Thursday and first Tuesday and third Tuesday, 9 a.m. PST, and second and fourth 9 p.m. PST. So that's our cadence. So that we have both an America's friendly and an Asia Pacific friendly time zone on time in which we can meet and collaborate. So I think the Slack channel will also have a link to a document that has the Zoom channel, and I think the CNCF calendar also has been updated to reflect the working group meeting times as well.
Yeah, and I just pasted here the CNCF Slack channel. It's /obs-obs-query-standard-wg working group. So observability query standard working group, obs query standard WG. You have it here. I'll also paste it as part of the show notes for the listeners on the podcast. And yeah, really, really encourage you to first check out the Slack channel and check out the charter. And there's a running Google Doc like any other working group with notes. We had now the first meeting and more to be added. So chime in, join the Zoom and on the time zone that is friendly for you. Really exciting. And I don't know, I discussed this vision also. I talked about unified, I talk a lot about unified observability. And I emphasize that unified observability doesn't end just with the instrumentation and collection side. It goes to the back end. And I think you took the first step beyond just instrumentation and the generation and the collection side of the house. So it's very interesting. I even talked about it with Chris Anicek, the CNCF CTO here on the show, when you talked about the vision for OpenTelemetry. So I think he's aligned. Let's try and pull him to support this and put his way to make this a reality. But definitely sounds like everyone is very much aligned with that. I want to make sure that the audience knows how to reach you after the episode. If they're interested, do you want to say where they can find you?
Sure. If you're on the CNCF Slack, my handle is Vijay Samuel. You can reach out to me there. On LinkedIn, again, I'm Vijay Samuel. You can reach out there. My Twitter handle is on the screen, so you should be able to see that. So, like one of these places, feel free to reach out and let's talk observability.
That's for sure. Where is the next? Where's your next talk? Where are you on stage next?
I've applied to a few. Still waiting to hear on that. But hoping to be at KubeCon Chicago. That's a big one for sure.
I'm counting on catching up with you there. I missed you at KubeCon Euro, but definitely looking forward to KubeCon North America and Chicago. And your talks, great to see you taking the stage more and more with Scale 20X and others. You have so much to share. We just scratched the surface with this episode, but you're doing at eBay, your team is doing amazing stuff. So I look forward to hearing more and your blogs. Follow for the listeners, do follow the blog posts, fascinating about different aspects, both on the metric side, on the OTel side, and many others. So lots of good stuff coming out of this team. Keep an eye out for this one. I'll share a few links also on the show notes for some interesting topics that we discussed here. I want to, with that, thank you very much for joining me on this show, Vijay. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. One thing before we close, eBay is always looking to hire the best individual engineers out there. Please do check out our jobs page if you are intrigued by the scale at which we work at and the problems that we solve. I consider it to be an absolute God-given blessing to have spent my entire formative years. I've been this month marks 11 years at eBay, my first job. eBay has been great. If you're looking for something challenging, eBay is the place to be.
Yeah, sounds like a fascinating and challenging place in terms of technology being at the higher end of the scale. So if you are looking for interesting technological challenges, that team sounds like fascinating. And thank you all on the listener side for joining us for today's episode of Open Observability Talks. All the episodes, as always, will be available on the your favorite podcast app or on YouTube. We publish the episodes on the last Thursday of the month, so this episode will also come out to the podcast apps last Thursday of the month. If you are listening to this episode on the podcast, do know that we live stream the episodes on Twitch and YouTube. So just you can find all the details on our Twitter page @OpenObserve. where you can get the updates on the live streams, and you can also share, comment, suggestions, news bits, and anything else. So do follow us on Twitter at Open Observe, or myself at Horovitz, HOROVITS. I'm Dotan Horovitz, and thank you very much for listening, and see you on next month's episode of Open Observability Talks, and may the open source be with you.